Welcome to the Physics Teaching Podcast, a podcast for physics teachers made by physics teachers. My name is Patrick Kaplow. I'm a physics teacher in Windham, New Hampshire, USA, and I'm joined by two fine chaps.
You said that again.
Well, they couldn't make it, so me and Thomas are here instead. But
so I'm Thomas WP, a part-time, A-level mostly, and a bit of Year 7 teacher of physics.
And I'm Robin Griffiths, and I'm a kind of full-time teacher of physics, and I do all the meaty year groups from 8 to 13.
And Patrick has joined us today because we have a bit of an American flavour.
Yeehaw!
So it's an American flavour this week because we have quite a long interview with Moses Rifkin. So we invited Patrick back on to give his opinion of what Moses has to tell us. And it's something pretty close to Robin and my and Patrick's hearts. We had a long chat with Moses Rifkin about underrepresentation in physics and science. And he has got a little curriculum that he has started teaching. And it did gain him some notoriety, which he talks about halfway through the conversation. So because it's quite long, I'm going to play right into it, and we'll see what you think at the end, chaps.
Hi, I'm Moses Rifkin. I'm a high school physics teacher in Seattle, Washington, in the U.S., and I also am one of the editors of the underrepresentation curriculum.
Well, welcome to the podcast, Moses. It's been a long time in the coming. We've had a few misfires, including today,
That's true.
We got the time zone wrong by 2 hours. But here we are. So We're very interested in social justice in the podcast. The elephant in the room is that we're two white, middle-aged men. And we very early on looked and talked about girls into physics. So, and then you were suggested to us as someone who can teach us more about inclusivity, if that's the right word, social justice. You called it something else there, which I've already forgotten. So do tell me what you've been doing on that.
Yeah, and maybe the even bigger elephant is that I'm also a middle-aged white man, and maybe we can sort of loop back to what that means for us middle-aged white men who are pretty common among physics teachers. I think at the underrepresentation curriculum at its core is pretty simple. We do a unit in my class where we look at the demographics of who does physics. Those are freely available, at least in the US, those are freely available. And I would assume that that's true in other countries, but I don't know. So we look at those demographics, which as you said, sort of skew more towards male, skew more towards white and Asian American. And we compare that to the demographics of America. And instantly students start having questions about why that is and ideas about why that might be. And so by looking at the field of physics, we have a chance to have a conversation about the field of physics and how physicists' identities might explain why that underrepresentation exists. Does that make sense?
That does make sense. I'm picturing your class. I'm wondering what the sort of mix of people in your class is. Is it, you know, white, middle class, as we'd call them, Americans, or do you have a good mix of people in the class who are addressing this?
Yeah, I think some of both. I teach in Seattle, which on the one hand, I should also say I teach in what in America we call private or independent schools. And so just relative to the population of the U.S., my school is whiter and wealthier than the median. And that said, this curriculum is being taught around the country at you know, tens and maybe hundreds of schools. So it works in other settings as well. But just speaking about my setting, yeah, the students in my class are not all white and not all wealthy. They're about 30% students of color in my school. And I think my classes reflect that. But yeah, to answer your question, it's a whiter and wealthier population than sort of your average.
Can you give me an example of sort of the differences in the people doing physics and the people in the country that stand out from the work you do? I know you have a website and we'll talk about that later, but
yeah,
just give me a headline figure to talk about the problem. Say, for example, here, physics A-level, I think 12% of people doing physics A-level are female. Mm-hmm. You know, and I've been looking out the window and I've noticed that 50% of the people in the world are female. So there's a big disconnect there, huge disconnect. And
right.
A lot of that is down to societal bias. So what some headline figures from your stats?
One of the things that I think is really interesting about the under-rep curriculum is that it lets teachers focus on different aspects of identity depending on what they want to talk about. So we have some teachers who look at gender underrepresentation in their classes. And as you said, there's plenty to talk about there. In my class, we talk about racial underrepresentation. So in the US, for example, 12% of the population identifies as Black or African American. And among physicists, this is from National Science Foundation data, just 3.9% identify as Black or African American. So you can do that same comparison that you just said by looking out the window along racial lines or gender lines or class lines or disability lines. There's a rich data set out there that you can mine. And so I choose to focus on race, but you could just as easily do the same sort of template for gender.
You have a website, underrep.com, I think. And
yep, underrep.
If I go there, I fill out a survey, and that gives me access to the curriculum, doesn't it? Now, I'm afraid because of our time muck up, I didn't get to do this beforehand. When I get through, is the data in the curriculum and I can mine it myself, or do you link to it?
There's a link to the resources. And, you know, actually our conversation is making me realize one of the things that we should do is expand internationally. We do have users who aren't in the US, and most of the resources are focused on US data. So I'm just sort of flagging that for myself. But yeah, it's a little bit of a complicated challenge to try to create a resource that's flexible enough for teachers to use in different ways. So because I'm a physics teacher and because I was the first to sort of write many of the lessons, the physics data is in there along racial lines, and there are links to find the data sets that you could use for other identifiers or for other sciences. We have a number of teachers who aren't physics teachers doing the same comparison. Yeah, it's all in there, though.
It would be really relevant to me. I've had some issues recently, and I'm extraordinarily upset about it. And they don't understand. They don't even get it. They don't even get it. That's the frustrating thing. They just don't get that it's a problem.
I think that's... I'm so glad you brought that up. And 100% the same thing is happening in my class. We're actually about to talk about that on Friday. I think, you know, I mentioned being three middle-aged white men is relevant here. I think a lot of students who come from privileged populations, like white male students, really, as you said, just don't get it. And that's not their fault, right? It's not about blaming or making anyone feel guilt. But I think part of my motivation as a white man here is to help those students get it, so that they can not feel defensive or guilty or scared or just sort of avoid these conversations. Because I think that's often the response, at least in my classes, that they just want to opt out and let the conversation about underrepresentation be for students who are underrepresented. But it's my strong belief that any change is going to require all students, especially those who have those identities. So I'm really heartened to hear that you're talking to your students about this, because I think at some point they need to be part of the conversation. It really gets complicated quickly. And I think part of what we've tried to do with this resource is give teachers some like structure so that they don't feel like they're just wading in and have their pants down at the end of it all. You know, I think it's so exciting to hear that you felt like, yeah, I just need to talk to my students about this. But I think a lot of science teachers are so nervous about getting in over their heads that what we're trying to do here is give them some scaffold for those conversations.
You know, being a white middle-aged man, as I am and as you are, I think once you work this out, I know Robin feels strongly about this as well, the onus is to try and unpick it wherever you find it, and because not everyone of our type is doing that.
That's right.
So it's very heartening to hear that you have resources that will scaffold me through what might be quite a tricky conversation. I still haven't worked out how to deal with this with the class of so many boys and how to make them more aware of the effect it can have in the long term, you know, in society. You know, we have this societal problem that so few girls go into engineering and physics. I've got three daughters, two of them through to A-level, neither of them chose physics, even though it was their best subject lower down the school. So I think addressing it is important. So your resource, I assume it's a labor of love, or are you funded by some institute?
It definitely began as a labor of love. This was something that I did sort of for my own edification. I don't know, maybe I did it for my own alignment, and was sort of doing it in isolation for many years. And then Fox News got wind of it, which is a whole nother story. And I became very briefly in a small corner of the universe, a little bit of a celebrity. And one fantastic silver lining of that was that a lot of physics teachers heard about it through that. And so there's a group of about 8 of us, most of whom are physics teachers, but not all, who are now working on taking my sort of hideous Moses only resources and making them accessible to more teachers. So I think it's grown from an individual labor of love to a collective labor of love to, we're just now starting to get some funding from organizations, which is really exciting, because it lets us scale up and have a website and try to get the word out. Because those things take money.
I've got to have to rewind to the Fox News story, because everything we hear about Fox News here suggests to me they may not have taken a positive take on what you're doing.
I think that's very accurate.
Uncomfortable. That's a national news. So Trump didn't tweet about it, did he?
No, it was pre-Trump, which I think my lucky stars for, because I think, you know, it would have been similar in kind, but an order of magnitude different in today's environment. But it was still pretty nasty. I got a lot of emails and notes from people who just wanted to tell me how wrong I was. And I'm a really big believer in dialogue, and I maybe naively tried to correspond with those people, because I think some of those criticisms are fair. But there weren't many people who wanted to talk about this. There were a lot of people who just wanted to yell at me.
That must have been uncomfortable.
It was uncomfortable, and at the same time, you know, I was gratified. It brought, you know, 5 times more positivity my way than negativity. You know, for every ugly email I got, I had emails from former students saying, you know, this unit was really powerful for me, and I saw that you were going through this on Facebook. Just keep doing it. I was really fortunate to have a school that supported me. And so in the end, it was a really, I never would have guessed that this was the case, but it was a really positive experience for me, and it led to the under-rep curriculum, which is something I'm really proud of. So I wouldn't necessarily recommend to everyone that they get picked on in that way, but when I look at it on balance, it's been amazing for me. So every so often I think I should send them a thank you card.
What a positive thing. I mean, I'm so naive. I can't see how someone could take shining a light on underrepresentation in science, take it in a negative way. I mean, they must have spun it horrifically.
There is definitely some spin. And I think, you know, I said before that maybe some of the criticism, if I squint, is very fair. And I think at the core, people have different opinions about what deserves to be taught in a physics class. And truth be told, you know, the days that we spend talking about underrepresentation are fewer days that we talk about rotational mechanics. So that's a trade-off that I'm willing to make, but I can understand why some physics teachers think maybe I'm going beyond the boundaries of my job. And I, you know, I feel like I can make a compelling case for why that's not true, but fair enough. And I think there's also a concern that when I say talk about underrepresentation, really what I'm doing is just indoctrinating students with my beliefs. That's something that I'm very sensitive to. And I think anyone who looks closely at the curriculum will see it's really about promoting dialogue and talking across difference, not about thinking a certain way. But I can appreciate why somebody would be really afraid that, you know, have this army of physics teachers telling students what to think about gender or race. That's not at all what we're doing, but I think that's a common fear.
Yes, I can see that. But the way I would look at it is you're following evidence. I mean, that's what a scientist does. You're looking at the world and looking at, say, physics, and you're seeing a marked difference. And if you believe educating the child is about educating the whole child rather than just preparing them for an exam. If you're, as a physics teacher, you're giving them love of physics and an understanding of the world in which they operate as physicists, I'm obviously somewhat biased. It sounds to me like what you're doing is exactly what you should be doing, what we all should be doing.
I could not say that better. That was perfect. That's exactly it. And I think at an individual level, for those, you know, for those students who are from underrepresented identities, it can be incredibly isolating to not have anyone name the elephant in the room. And for those students who come from overrepresented identities, it can be misleading to not have anyone point out, hey, have you noticed that everyone looks like you? It's win-win for all students, but obviously you and I are preaching to the choir.
Yeah. It is problematic in the UK with our curriculum being so tightly nailed down. You know, I have to teach specific things and it's tight. Mm-hmm. I think you're much freer in the United States because a lot of the time you can actually choose what you teach unless it's APs. So how long is your course? Is it as long or as short as you want it to be? So could it be one lesson or 10 lessons?
Yeah, that's precisely it. It's everything about the curriculum is flexible. So we have some teachers who do a day. In my class, I spend 7 days. And I have actually increased that over the years because students say they want more. But you're right that it depends a lot on individual teachers' flexibility. We do find actually that a bunch of AP teachers are looking for something to do after the students take the AP test. So different teachers find their ways, but to answer your question, yeah, there is no set number of days.
Yeah, that makes sense. I didn't realize the AP students have to stay in school here. Once the kids take their A-levels, they're gone. They have left. The moment they finish their last exam, they don't come back to school.
I can imagine that being a relief to everyone involved. There's sort of a collective hand-wringing about what to do with students across all disciplines after they take the APs. But this is maybe an elegant solution to an inelegant problem.
It does sound fantastic. I'm definitely thinking about the next step with these kids, the problems I've had with sexism.
Yeah. I mentioned that this Friday, my class is going to have a conversation about gender. There's an organization, at least here in the US, called Step Up. Has that sort of made its way over to you?
It might have done, but I'm the least informed person you'll ever speak to. The podcast has been a massive bit of professional development for me. So,
yeah. That's another thing maybe worth Googling. If you Google Step Up Physics, it's two lessons. So a small scale intervention that have been research backed to try to help physics teachers. In their case, the scope is a little bit smaller. They're trying to promote positive physics identity formation in female students. And there are two lessons for people who want to sort of engage in that. One of them looks a lot like the underrepresentation curriculum lessons because I was involved in the curriculum development for Step Up, but that's another resource that you and your listeners could check out too.
That's great. I will search it up and put it in the show notes.
Beautiful. One other thing, and you know, feel free to cut this if it's not useful, but I think broadly speaking, whether it's the underrepresentation curriculum or Step Up, I think there's a real power in just to keep using your phrase to name the elephant in the room. And I think, you know, you raised a really knotty problem with how do you support the one student in the room? that's really quite difficult, but on Friday, one thing I've done in my classes that has been really powerful is just asking students anonymously via Google Forms, you know, do you feel like gender has influenced your experience? And then sharing the data back with them year after year. There's the male students say no, and the female students say yes. And that promotes a conversation in our class that, like I said before, isn't meant to make anybody feel guilty, but really is eye-opening for a lot of students. So I think that's not the most polished approach necessarily. There's no lesson plan there that I have, but over the years, I've just found that talking about the thing is a really is a much better step than not talking about it. And there's research by Zahra Hazari to support the idea that it's a good thing, not a bad thing.
I like the idea of keeping the data over time as well. Well, Moses, we have such limited time in the podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, but I think, God, I could mine you for information for hours, but you've got to get off to school, haven't you?
I do. The sun is coming up over here. It's been a pleasure speaking with you too.
Yes, it has been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much. I've got the Fox News people queued up so you can hear them pontificating.
Well, this probably wasn't on the syllabus in your high school physics class. A Seattle teacher came up with new 6-day curriculum that includes lessons on white privilege. He says it will prepare students for institutional racism and social justice. So what does that have to do with physics exactly? Joining us now is Catherine Timp of the National Review. Thanks for being here. Interesting case series, really. He was concerned the students, quote, weren't learning about their own privilege.
Right,
so
exactly.
He decided to do a little digging himself.
Right, exactly. It's not an open mic night in these classrooms. You don't get to decide you can talk about anything you want to these students. It has to be about what your class is. Physics class, you talk about physics. Really, it's that simple.
Well, so here's what he was asking the students, which has a lot of people riled up. Students were asked to take a pre-evaluation of curriculum and answer these questions. Do believe or not believe, which is what they were asked to answer. Do you believe or not believe American society fits my definition of racist? Okay, I'm not sure what that has to do with physics. Do you believe or not believe people born white tend to have a set of advantages over those born black? And do you believe or not believe that I have consistently benefited from unearned privilege in my life?
All right, physics class again. He said he was jealous that all the other teachers got to talk about society, English, history. Then he also said they're not learning about it. Which one is it? They clearly are. You just said you were jealous of all the other teachers. I don't know what this is really about. I guess it's just his own agenda. He wants to talk about it. But you know what? We're consistently behind science and math of other developed countries in high school. Maybe it's because physics teachers aren't teaching physics in classes.
Well, yeah, there you go.
Well, I have to say that my initial reactions to listening to Moses were that not only was I just so impressed and blown away with the initiative to generate curriculum within the context of physics, but if I'm being really honest, I thought about the bravery and courage required to kind of take those first steps. I mean, I'm sure I'm a, you know, I imagine myself feeling incredibly awkward trying to follow in his footsteps. I don't know about you guys, but I know that I should do it, and I think that I will do it, or maybe I should commit to doing it, but it's not going to be easy.
No, I think it's not. It's an uncomfortable thing for anyone to go through, I think, in terms of confronting your own biases, because we all carry them. And it is one of the things that working at the IOP was really interesting. They did a lot of work on unconscious bias there. And it's a slightly uncomfortable but slightly liberating experience in that you come face to face with the idea that you do carry prejudices with you. It's the way your brain works. Your brain takes shortcuts in order to save processing cycles, and in so doing can often pigeonhole, and without you even recognizing it, it can make you have these preconceptions that are just there and you call on and that come to the fore, particularly when you're tired, when your brain's under stress, when you're under pressure. And of course, that's a good description often of how a lot of teachers spend their time. So it's really important to confront those unconscious biases. And I think we'll put some stuff in the show notes about this so that people can follow up.
It is uncomfortable, and the UNDERIC curriculum is obviously aware of that. And just to give an example, they have a thing called a stand-up task. And I'm thinking, what, stand up and show your opinion? And it's subtle. You give them a questionnaire, a few questions, and they write the answers, or they just tick the answers. And then you take in these anonymous sheets, you shuffle them and give them back out. So it's just ticks and crosses, so that you hand them back out, and then you say, right, who answered that they feel their gender has held them back in life? And then the person with that slip stands up. So it anonymizes the response, but you can still have a real visceral look at the number of people in the room that affects. So I think it is aware that it's an uncomfortable space to work in. But it is important. And I have had this problem in my class, and I heavily edited that. We actually talked much more about it, and I talked about the names of the kids. I thought long and hard about whether I wanted to actually include that, because it's quite even that edited segment of it is quite a personal thing to be facing in your class, and I am finding it extremely hard. I've had tremendous support from the school, but it's still problematic.
And there are organisations out there to help. So there's an organisation called Gender Action, which is building a kind of consortium of interested parties and subject associations and businesses and charities, all trying to work together to just put to bed some of the pernicious, absolutely pernicious stereotypes that stop girls from accessing careers like physicist or engineer or you name it, anywhere there's a gender bias, you can find behind it some insipid little comment somewhere that somebody made of, oh, that's a man's job, or girls don't do that, or something like that, and people pick that up and children pick that up, and of course it just becomes, that's it. And I think particularly physics is at risk, because when a lot of people talk about physics, and particularly because it's been so exclusive of women in the past, particularly when women talk about physics, say, oh, I didn't do physics at school, I wasn't very good at it. So girls build up this picture that their female role models talk disparagingly about physics, but they look at physicists and they're mostly men, and they think, well, that's it. And they don't even think that's the thing. The unconscious bias sinks in, the pattern sinks into their memory that physics is not a space in which girls are welcome. And it's pernicious. It's just wrong.
You know, I feel like I have a lot of experience being in a classroom with mixed gender, not just, one or two girls. I feel like I have experience with classes that are very close to parity. But I'd feel, I guess, a bit uncomfortable and like I wouldn't know what I was talking about if I went into underrepresentation in race. Like I'm much more comfortable and feel like I actually have some anecdotal data to support, maybe why girls choose one direction or another. But one of the things that Moses brought up is that the same set of rules that tends to affect bias towards people of color is the same, are often the same drivers that affect women in physics. So I guess my point is, maybe it would make sense for teachers that don't teach in schools with a significant racial minority to start with gender and then move to racial bias.
Yes, I see what you mean, because it's just it'll get you used to the idea of challenging your biases, challenging your preconceptions, to talking about those issues in a way that you're more comfortable with before you push into something which you think, well, that could backfire, or that could go wrong. I think there are, again, there are organisations, I think, to help, aren't there, that will work with you on these things. And I think, so many people are so keen to deal with this issue because it is a social justice issue. It's an issue of fairness, justice, equity, and therefore it's everybody's issue. It isn't just an issue that women should be worried about their underrepresentation in physics, that people from ethnic minorities should be worried about their underrepresentation in physics or whatever. It's a justice issue that everybody should be concerned with, and that's a really important point, I think.
Yeah, particularly we white middle-aged men, and who are probably the majority of physicists, it's us who have to really step up and try and swing that percentage, swing that value.
Yeah, and it's really challenged me to kind of think about it. You guys were talking about post-AP test. Yes, our students usually stick around for another 3 or 4 weeks after the AP test. So we have little project work, little modules that are given to students, curricular modules after the test. This would be a great opportunity.
Yeah, and that is the problem, as I alluded to when I was chatting with him. We don't have that slot. And I feel it would be, if I started suddenly teaching about equality in physics. It would be so heavy-handed, and I just don't want to go there. And we are under pressure to get through the content, really, because that's the way I teach. I do a lot of practical work, so I don't smash through the content before Christmas on the second year. And I take my time, but I just feel it would be heavy-handed, as I say, to go in with this now. And maybe it's something one should do at a different time when they're a bit younger. I don't know.
Well, I think I've got a kind of call to action to the podcast listener here, because I know that at the moment many senior leaders I know that are, so Patrick, for a bit of background here, the regulator of education in England is an organisation called Ofsted, and they go around inspecting schools and they look at things, and at the moment their big focus is curriculum. So lots of schools are all of a sudden very concerned about their curriculum, and they're revisiting their curriculum and they're rewriting their curriculum and they're putting together their curriculum. And dear podcast listener, if your school currently is rebuilding its curriculum, why not look at Step Up and see if you can find some ways to include that diversity and inclusion into your science curriculum? Make sure you put it in there in a reasonable way. Make sure you monitor out the outcomes for it. But it would be very, very hard for your SLT to oppose it. It would be very, very hard for any Ofsted inspector to say that it is inappropriate within the science context to have areas that talk about inclusivity and talk about increasing the or addressing the underrepresentation of certain groups within science. So there's a prevailing wind that you can catch at the moment, I think, to make this really fly in your school. And so I would urge you to have a look at Step Up and see if you can use any of it as you develop a new curriculum.
Yeah, Step Up is the Women into Physics, and the Moses thing is underrep.com. Now, let's move away from this quite challenging subject. I, of course, asked Moses if he had a practical in memoriam, and he did. And I think it's one for Patrick. I'm dying to hear whether Patrick has done this or whether he plans to do it in the next few days.
He will now.
Do you have a practical in memoriam? Do you have a favorite lab that you would share, simple, a practical, or a demo that you like?
Yeah, I do. I have started, and this is not an original idea for me. It's something that I have borrowed from others. I guess I should say second to the underrepresentation curriculum, my second favorite. I've started introducing the idea of projectile motion, of bringing students up in a crane lift, and their challenge is to drop an egg on my head as I walk by underneath. So this is after they've learned about free fall and kinematics, so it feels very easy to them, but is both a really elegant way of launching the idea of horizontal and vertical motion together. And it's also super fun, and they're pretty successful, and everyone goes crazy when it works.
And you get showered with eggs.
I do. There's it's a small price to pay for student engagement.
Your American teachers are bonkers. I was watching Patrick Kaplow's tweets. He has a module where the scoring is a target. We know Patrick likes targets, but the target is a 20-meter across target. And he stands in the middle, dressed as a soldier from the medieval times, and people lob water balloons in with trebuchets. If they hit him, they get an A.
Wow. That's going on my list. I think we're doing the much smaller version with a little, projectile launcher, but that sounds way better.
And I'm super relieved that we don't have an outside staircase at school, or I'd be trying to... Do you carry an umbrella or you wear a hat?
I wear a hard hat and a sort of rain slicker, because it gets pretty ugly. And the hard hat is actually, for anybody listening, very important.
Yeah.
They really hurt.
Yeah, how high up do they go on this, what would we call it, a cherry picker, we'd call it?
Oh, yeah, about 7 or 8 meters, maybe.
Oh, goodness.
So, yeah, and that's I think they do the calculations, but then the day that they go up, there's a sense of like, whoa. Yeah. And, at a physics level, it's really powerful to be able to predict exactly when to do something to get the outcome that you want. That's a memorable.
It is.
Memorable.
I'm not sure many people would have access to a cherry picker. How do you find one of those? Even at a public school, not everyone can have a cherry picker.
I'm sure that's true. Actually, the teacher who I borrowed it from somehow had access to the roof of his building. So that might be another alternative. But yeah, you're right that not everyone has access, but maybe a window on a high floor or...
An outdoor staircase would be... I've had that at every school apart from this one, actually.
That would be perfect.
Well, that is a practical I would like to watch. So I'm not sure I'd want to be under the rain of eggs, but that's brilliant. Thank you very much, Moses.
Yeah, well, I like all good things. I didn't come up with that myself, but I'm proud to share it with others.
Brilliant kinematics demo. I will not be suggesting that to my kids, I think. Well, thank you very much, Moses. It's been an absolute pleasure, and thank you. And I didn't realize you were a listener, so thank you for listening.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for putting the podcast out. It's great to be part of a community of people who are engaged in this conversation.
There you go, Patrick. That's your next challenge.
It's brilliant, isn't it? I mean,
isn't that great?
It's great because you know those students are going to be super motivated to try to get the result they're looking for.
Yeah, I mean, Slice the Pendulum's dead to me now.
I'm just a little worried. Is there some sort of tradition of self-harm amongst American physics teachers that they feel they have to put their bodies on the line in almost every lab? I don't know. It's I worry about you.
Listen, I refuse to accept that this is cultural. You tell me that you're just not delighted when your students are fist bumping and high fiving after they do a physics problem. I mean, how often does that happen?
Well, absolutely, that is true. And yeah, I'm just trying to think. I'm thinking back to my most creative things, which usually involve make a cake out of quarks, make a cake to represent nuclear fission, make a cake to represent nuclear fusion. You're starting to see a pattern here. I'm starting to think maybe I need to push this out of it. Yeah,
it's the scale. The scale is. Just that's the American thing, isn't it? An American pond is what we would call a massive lake. I went to Walden Pond in America and it was enormous. But Patrick, the you standing dressed as a knight in shining armor, clutching a shield. I have seen the photos and we must share them on Twitter. When he does his egg, he sent me a video which we'll put on the website, I guess. He is properly covered, and he comes out, he walks under a covered walkway and then just pops out, and the egg has to hit him as he appears. So they have someone, he's got a metronome, he's walking along with a metronome, obviously saying they know the speed, and they have a spotter who says, now. And then as he emerges, the egg cracks onto his hat. So I have this picture of you in your... Because you build a fort, don't you? I mean, you don't do this by halves, your trebuchet stuff. You build a fort and you stand in the fort with another soldier, don't you?
That's true. I have an amplified bullhorn to taunt the students with. I mean, haven't you seen Monty Python?
Here we go. I knew it. I knew it'd end up being some British person's fault.
It's awful.
I knew it.
But this is the difference between our curricula. I could not do that and make the kids do it. You can say the next module, your grade is based on lobbing a water balloon at me from 80 meters away. I just cannot. I cannot shoehorn that into my curriculum. I'd have to set up a trebuchet club, and I'd have to get the kids motivated, and maybe three kids would turn up regularly and build one trebuchet.
The students take it very seriously. As a matter of fact, this year that we just finished, right around early November, was our ninth year doing it, ninth consecutive year. So we've got an anniversary coming up, and there's like a culture around it. It's like a rite of passage. Oh, you signed up for physics? You'll be building a trebuchet. That's kind of understood. Right. And, you know, I've heard that students have decided in eighth grade who's going to be on their trebuchet team when they're juniors and seniors building these things. So there's definitely a part of me, and I'm not, you know, afraid to say this, where I've, you know, questioned the amount of time and energy spent on this trebuchet project for the students, not for me. We don't take any time outside of class to do this. It's completed entirely outside of class, with the exception of the actual event. You know, there is a lot of ways to build something that fires a projectile and for you to study it with just distance and time data. But it's become like a cultural phenomenon at our school, and the kids absolutely love it. So, you know, it's got to stay in there just for the kind of camaraderie.
Brilliant. lovely. Team physics, great.
So you were hit first shot this year, weren't you? I saw you.
It's the first time it's ever happened. And I did it for 6 years at the school before the one I'm in now in Wyndham. So I've been doing this for a while, and I've never been hit first shot. I usually, you know, if there's 40 to – there's usually around 50 trebuchets, and I'll get – and they get – Cool.
So you've got these helium balloons filled with water. Is there a limit on the size of the balloon?
No, there's no limit on the size of the balloon. It's good sport. And the kids quickly find out that the bigger balloons, even if their trebs are strong enough, they have enough counterweight to launch them, the balloons will typically rupture in the sling as they get whipped around. And so there is kind of a practical limit on the size of the balloons.
Uh-huh.
Do they hurt?
I do carry a hand shield because, yeah, I'll let them hit me in the chest. Part of the show is to just go backwards, like you've been hit so hard that you get flung off the wall, and they go crazy. They
so, I'm so jealous. I love I'm it. So jealous.
I'm being really honest. I love Moses' idea. Because if it's pure simplicity, I mean, all you need is a high space. If you have one, I'm thinking even like a mezzanine, if there's a, you know, we've kind of got this big atrium when you walk into the building. And so we might drop eggs off of that. That'll become, you know, an activity. I think the kids will get a huge kick out of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the only building we've got with the height is the sports hall. And I imagine there's roof access, Oh, dear. I'm sticking with Slice the Pendulum. I actually ordered that this week, Patrick, sure. So thank you for that.
That's good.
I'm doing that on Monday.
Yeah, and talking of podcast tips, I did woodlouse racing for the speed time lesson with my Year 8 today as well, which worked really well. So thank you for – I can't remember who it was who gave us the tip, but thank you who gave us woodlouse racing because it's great, Sylvia. And it worked really well. Thank you, Sylvia.
Isn't that great? I mean, honestly, we're all using ideas from, you know, different physics teachers who have shared with us. It's fantastic.
It is great. I love it. Yeah, every week, a couple of nuggets. It's the way.
That's a tagline. Every week, a couple of nuggets. That should be...
I'm trying to get some artwork, somebody to draw up a kind of cartoon picture of us lot as gormless, sort of head and shoulder cartoon shot. And every week is just a couple of nuggets. Yeah.
Anyway, well, it's been a bit of a different podcast this week, hasn't it? With I still think what Moses is doing is brilliant, and I wish I was brave enough to shoehorn it in, but I really like what you said, Robin, about changing the curriculum. I think you could definitely have in our year 11, year 10, something about that in the curriculum. That would be, you know, we have this sort of dead year in the UK, Patrick. So traditionally, the last 2 years was the GCSE, which is the exams before A levels. But many, many schools have pushed it back a year into the year 9. And it's sort of a dead year, and there's too much time for the content, generally, I feel. So maybe it does give us time and space to do something about representation.
Yeah, I think they're going to extend the Key Stage 3, because I think that's the other thing Ofsted have said. They're not too keen on the idea of a two-year Key Stage 3. So there'll be some more time. And like I say, the curriculum has to be rewritten, and it would be a brave person who would argue against putting this in the curriculum. That's my point, whether they're an Ofsted inspector or a senior leader in the school. So this is now is a great opportunity to get this embedded.
That's a great point.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think we should call a halt there, chaps. It's been a pleasure, as always. But I think we're wearing out the ears of the listener. So I'll just say, Patrick, thank you very much for your time. It's been great talking to you.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you, Robin. I'll speak to you next week.
It's been lovely. Thanks, Thomas. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Physics Teaching Podcast, and special thanks this week to Moses Rifkin. Please get in touch. The best way is email contact@thephysicsteachingpodcast.com. There's also a contact form on our website, the.physicsteachingpodcast.com, or there's Twitter @PhysicsTP, Instagram @physics_teaching_podcast, or even the lovely WhatsApp or Telegram message. The number's in our Twitter profile. Thanks for listening. We'll speak to you next week.